Welcome to the Dialogue by Wirepoints, connecting the dots between our economy, government, and people. And now your hosts, Ted Dabrowski and Mark Glennon.
Welcome to the Dialogue from Wirepoints. This is Mark Glennon. I'm here with my partner, Ted Dabrowski. We have a special guest today. Tom DeVore is the attorney who has won those recent lawsuits regarding this statewide school mask mandate. Additionally, he's recently said he's going to be running for attorney general. I think the official announcement is coming on the 28th. But we'll go through each of those matters. And I'll start out just with a little thumbnail for those of you who don't know about the status of that case. A Sangamon County lower court ruled essentially against the statewide mask mandate and granted a temporary restraining order to a group of named plaintiffs, and said that certain rules are passed by the agencies were void, which took down the entire statewide mandate. That was appealed. The appellate court refused the appeal, said it was moot. The Pritzker administration is now trying to get the Illinois Supreme Court to accept an appeal from that appellate ruling. Tom, did I do justice from that, or tell us where we're at? What's the latest?
No, I agree. You did absolute justice to it. They filed their request. Only the state defendants, which would be the governor and the agencies, have requested review by the Illinois Supreme Court. None of the school district defendants requested any review. So it's just the governor at this point.
Tom, this has stoked a lot of interest on our site. We can tell from the traffic, the comments, the emails we get. There seems to be a huge level of anger among a lot of parents. What's your sense of it? I mean, is it the lawsuit that has stoked this up? And what kind of reaction are you getting as you run around and talk to these parents?
Well, I don't know that it's the lawsuit that stoked it up. You know, human behavior is an interesting thing. And I've always found it amazing, even before all of this started. But this anger that you are seeing the last month or so coming from the parents, it's always been there. It's just they were looking for an outlet and they didn't know where to go with that pent up frustration and anger. And I think the judge's ruling gave them the avenue to really move forward with what they've been feeling for a long time, but they couldn't articulate sufficiently because they're not lawyers.
What was the process, Tom, that you were able to get all these people together? You know, like you said, there's been a lot of ticked off people, but, you know, as we've gone around and complained about the issue at Wirepoints, you know, there's not much we can do as a 501c3. So what was different about how you approached it? And, you know, you've got a lot of people fired up.
Slowly and methodically trying to encourage people to quit being scared and to get out there and to stand up for what they believe in. This all started with me back in April or May of 2020. And it just took that long in order to get to the point to where we could get something accomplished. So, but again, we can go through the process if you want, but it's been something that's been in the works for the better part of 2 years.
Tom, one of the strangest things I've seen in this lawsuit is Governor Pritzker last week claimed that the statewide mandate is still in effect. And Attorney General Kwame Rule said the same thing, despite those lower court rulings, which, you know, newspapers across the country, some 700 school districts now have interpreted otherwise, have said they're free to do what they want, subject to the certain rules they still have to follow. What the heck? And but then I read the filings he has made with the Supreme Court. He didn't really say that. Why is he appealing if he thinks it's still in effect? Just go try to enforce it if it's still in effect. I mean, what's going on there, you know?
Yeah, it's gaslighting. I've been saying that to people of this state for, I don't know how long I've been saying it now. You know, the positions that I've taken on behalf of my clients since day one have never changed. I've been making the same legal arguments the whole time. The governor, because there's no foundation of which he's making these decisions and these actions, he's constantly moving the goalpost with his propaganda and his gaslighting. And so he's out there saying that regardless of what's going on, the mandate is still in place. He's trying to suggest that his, you know, executive order is authoritative, and he thinks and believes that he's had some success over the last couple of years. If he just says that people will listen to him out of fear and intimidation. And again, he has not come to appreciate that those days are now since past. And I don't know of anybody that I've talked to, even that gave some deference to what he's been doing for a while, say that his executive orders in a vacuum mean anything, because everybody has finally learned and understands what I've been saying for long before we got to schools, even when we were dealing with businesses, that those executive orders in a vacuum have no force and effect whatsoever. They're absolutely a fear tactic, and there's no way to enforce them. But he continues to say that, Mark, because he's trying to hope that somebody will still listen to his, again, gaslighting, and actually not make changes like the other 700 and some school districts have.
Now, Tom, you started way back when. What was your first suit? Was that with Senator Bailey at the time? On the executive orders, when I think he challenged those orders, right?
That's correct. The arguments were a little different, you know, and we'll get to how the governor's propaganda machine and, you know, the liberal unions like to say, well, you know, DeVore's hardly ever won a case. And I laugh because I've won the last 12. But yeah, back in April was the case that then House of Representative Bailey brought against Governor Pritzker. Again, the little bit different legal issue was being raised there. But yeah, that was the first one.
Suppose he gets the appeal, Supreme Court rules in his favor. What's he thinking, that he'd go back to imposing the mandate with, I mean, there's now only three states left. Maryland has just dropped their statewide mandate. They're in the process of it. The numbers are plummeting. What's he thinking? Where's he going with this? Is he just trying to placate the unions by, or does he really believe in the science of mass, or what? What's he thinking?
You're asking my opinion now, right? This is not my formal legal opinion. This is just Tom as a citizen. What's my opinion?
Yeah.
My opinion is he's looking for anybody, any court, any way to get him some cover for the complete and utter disaster that his policies have suffered the last month. So he knows and understands that with 720, 30, 40, 50 schools that have moved on to fully mask, optional, with no vaccination and testing, that genie is not going back in the bottle. But the governor has been wanting to migrate out of this mandate scenario on his own terms, so he could go into the election in the fall saying that, you know what, I was the champion, I kept everybody safe, and everything I was doing was lawful. He wants to make himself look good, and look good to the teachers' unions that still want this stuff. Where we sit right now, it's absolutely fallen apart for him, and it's a political nightmare. So he's looking for any court to just tell him that he did something right and lawful, so he can then grandstand and say, see, I was right all along. But oh, by the way, the facts and science led us to move on anyway, so I'm not going to change anything. That's what he's looking for. He's looking for somebody to give him some cover, because, again, his reputation, and I mean, when the judge says that he was engaging in behavior with his administrative agencies, that's the evil that the law was intended to protect us against, that's a pretty tough political black eye, and he's trying to salvage that. That's my opinion.
Yeah. Well, how does he end up if the Supreme Court goes against him, right? He doesn't have that positive story. Unless he gets to blame the courts, and he'll tell the unions, hey, listen, I tried, the courts won't let me. Is that it?
That's exactly what it is, Ted. Now, keep in mind, you've seen his approach to the courts soften here a little bit. I mean, when Judge Grischow had not yet ruled, he didn't even talk about the other 6, 7, or 8 judges that ruled against the school districts before he was a named party. But keep in mind, when those courts were ruling before I named the governor and those agencies, every school district that I argued against was saying, well, the governor's executive authority gives us power to do the things that we're doing. And all those judges said no. Once Judge Grischow ruled, he attacked her, called her ruling misguided, called it out of step with the legal analysis that existed in the state, which was absolutely 100% lie. And then when the appellate court turned over or sent it back and dismissed it as moot, he was like, well, I'm disappointed in their ruling, et cetera. He started softening that approach, because what's he going to do? Start attacking and criticizing the appellate court justices and then maybe the Supreme Court justices if they disagree with him like Judge Grischow did? I don't think he'll do that. So if the appellate court, and again, if the appellate court accepts this appeal, that in and of itself doesn't mean that they would find in his favor. That just means that they would take a look at and review it, right?
And if you wanted the Supreme Court, it would have to go back to a lower court, wouldn't it, for a full hearing on the merits?
Oh, absolutely. So yeah, he's just, again, the Supreme Court, what they're looking at now is, well, they merely review this interlocutory order. They've not reviewed an interlocutory order of the COVID-related issues yet in the last 2 years. So we'll see what they'll do. But to the extent that they say, no, we're not going to look at this right now, we still go back into the appellate court and we deal with the merits of the case. But again, I believe personally, not legally, the governor's more concerned about political optics of how this looks now than he is actually trying to get a ruling to put masks back on children. I mean, the Illinois Supreme Court just came out and said, we're not having masks anymore. Mayor Lightfoot just came out and says, we're not having masks anymore. Does he really think that there's going to be some holding or some ruling from somewhere that says we're going to force these masks back on kids? The Archdiocese of Chicago just came out and said on February 28th, no masks in our schools. So again, the governor's just desperately looking for somebody to say what he did was great and right and lawful so he can use that spin into the election.
So he's all alone right now, it looks like, with exception of, what is it, New York and California and Hawaii. So, right. He doesn't have any company.
He doesn't have any company, and he's all alone in the state of Illinois except for two. The Illinois Teachers Unions and the Attorney General, Kwame Raoul. Besides those two, he's completely alone on this ship for the most part in the state of Illinois.
Tom, before we leave the topic of this litigation, let's go back up to kind of 60,000 feet. And what has stunned me about this, I thought that when these mandates started coming down from the start, state and federal, that there were serious constitutional issues in all of it. These recent decisions were, based on statutory procedural due process. But none of those fundamental issues were ever taken up by the Illinois Supreme Court. I mean, it's really disappointing to me, not only that no litigant ever prevailed on those fundamental issues, but that the court never even took this up. It never got up the ladder. How did that happen? What's going on? I mean, where is the failure? Were there not enough litigants, or did the courts fail, or is my rusty lawyering skills so far out of date on constitutional issues that I'm wrong on this?
No, the issue is, for me to answer and tell you what I really think about that would require me to have commentary about the judiciary that I probably don't want to say publicly. But all I'll say on this podcast is that everybody is subjected to the human condition in every branch of government. You know, the judiciary is full of people just like every other branch of government. And when this all first started, you know, fear paralyzed the state and the nation. And they're like, we don't know what's going on. So, you know, to some extent, at the very onset of this, there was some appreciation that the executive, under some emergency authority, could try to manage it for some amount of time. I don't think our generation has fully appreciated and understood, when should that stop, right? When does that stop in our system of government of three branches, especially the legislature, take over? You know, I think that kind of caught every branch of government off guard, including the judiciary at the federal and state level. And now here we find ourselves, 2 years in, which in the grand scheme of a civilization, that's not that long a time. And government at all levels, the federal and the state levels across the state, are starting to take a more reasoned look at this and to say, look, there's serious constitutional issues going on. Those constitutional issues have been going on, as you're aware, Mark, since day one. The law has not changed, nor has the Constitution. But the optics of people, including those in the judiciary, will change as time goes on and these things start to level off a little bit. That's what I think.
Hey, Tom, one more thing on kids and masks. As we've mentioned, 750 or however many school districts have moved, the overwhelming majority, but there's one big one, Chicago Public Schools, that's still fighting it. And, they get to hide behind a collective bargaining agreement as to why they don't have to listen to the law or to the rulings. Talk a little bit about that, because that's a big deal.
There's one, in my opinion, I'll talk about my opinion and then I'll talk about the law. There's one issue and one issue only why the Chicago public school system is in the situation it's in. That is the Chicago Teachers Union and the Illinois Education Association. the whatever reason their policy ideals are, they're theirs to have. They are absolutely controlling the ball in the Chicago public school system. So that's what's going on there.
Sorry to interrupt. That's not that different from a lot of school districts where the unions control a lot of stuff. So, you know, why do they get special treatment in this case?
Because they're more powerful than a lot of these unions outside of the city of Chicago. I mean, the politics of the city are different than the politics across a lot of parts of the state. So even though they have influence, there's a lot of you know, disagreement amongst these union members across the state. And you get down even into my part of the world, you have some of the union members that are, let's call them pro-mask, for example. But overwhelmingly, you don't have the majority of them controlling that. And these school districts being a little bit smaller, and the communities are different too. So, you know, the cultures of all of these school districts are different. And again, in the city, they really wield a lot of power, that school union does, over that system. And I think that's the issue. Now, getting to the legal part of it, there is zero set of facts of which the collective bargaining agreement can dictate mask wearing for children. Privity of contract, which you learned, I think, in entry-level pre-contract law, is you can't bind somebody to an agreement that's not a party, let alone a minor child and their constitutional rights. When the school district came out and said that, they were saying, in my opinion, whatever they needed to say to try to keep the people, the parents and the children, in check with not going like you saw a lot of places across the state. We're not wearing masks because the judge says that we don't have to. And even though it only applies to the children, I had 8 kids in the Chicago public school system, that it applies to us too. They were looking for any way they could to temper that. And one of the things they did was, oh, the collective bargaining agreement. They're going to lose that argument, but they use that argument to try to, again, control the behavior of people. But that's not going to go anywhere.
Tom, switching gears, I think last week you had something on Facebook said you really don't like politics that much, but you've had a change of heart apparently, and on the 28th you're going to officially announce your run for Illinois Attorney General. Tell us what got into you. Why are you running?
I still don't like politics because I think politics, people get so caught up in their own motivations in that they lose sight of what they're supposed to do, which is to represent the people. That's why I think our political structure of Illinois as a whole is an abomination, because it's more about political jockeying than it is saying, hey, what are the needs of the people we represent? Their needs come first, and we need to listen to them before we act. You'll learn as you watch through this, you won't see me engaging in that political gamesmanship. I'm not going to talk about people I'm running against. I may talk about the policy things and the decisions they make in their job, but I'm not going to go down that path. In the primary, I'm not going to talk about them. It's not my style. I don't play those games. There's only one reason that I'm running, and that's because I watched these kids since February 4th. I got videos. I would get pictures of children, some of them as little as 6 and 7 years of age, going into their schools saying, I'm not wearing a mask because I don't want to. And the judge said, you can't make me. Can you imagine the courage that it took for those children to do that? It's, I don't know if I have that much courage, and I'm not scared of much. And when I saw that, I'm like, I can't abandon those kids at this time right now. I couldn't live with myself. You know, I was running for the court, and if I would have got elected to the court, I would have been taken out of these conversations in this advocacy. And I want to make sure, to the best of my ability, that we in this state don't have to deal with what we just dealt with for the last 2 years, because I don't know that we can survive another 2 years of an executive trying to wield power like a tyrant. And I say that technically. That's what we were dealing with. We were dealing with a governor who wanted to try to run this state like governors used to run states before we became the United States of America. They were reporting to kings back then, and they would wield these dictates and these decrees. If you see behind me right here, that's the ruling of Judge Mike McCaney that he issued on May 22nd of 2020, where he said just that. And how can I help to try to keep that from ever happening again? The only way I know how is the Attorney General's office. If I'm elected to the Attorney General's office, I assure you that any governor of this state, I don't care if they're Democrat or Republican, will not wield that kind of power against the people of this state if I have anything to say about it. That's the only reason I'm running. It has nothing to do with politics. I don't have any use for it, and I will make it quite clear. If you want to elect me, this is what I'm going to do. If you don't think I'm the right person for the job, that's okay. Don't vote for me, and I'll continue to do what I'm doing for a living. That's okay.
I've always thought that a reform-minded straight shooter in Illinois, given the unlikely possibility that reform-minded people would take over the legislature and the governor's office, a reform-minded attorney general could do a whole lot. There are many very, very interesting things that could be done. And, you know, we live in a new era on this, by the way, that, you know, state attorneys general have gotten very active in a lot of things, bringing, for example, a antitrust suit against Google and, you know, trying to crack down on some of the abuse by big tech, other things. We have state antitrust laws. We have our own civil rights legislation. I mean, there's any number of things that an attorney general could do, which might not be in accord with the prevailing regime in Springfield, but it would be based on Illinois law. You know, certainly Republican attorneys general are doing that, but it's become a trend both for Democrats and Republicans, depending on who's in office. And I'm not just talking about challenging federal actions, but again, all kinds of things at the state level. You know, what could you foresee yourself doing? I mean, just an example. So suppose Pritzker were trying to do when you were attorney general, what he's doing now. I guess as attorney general, you'd be obligated to defend him.
No, I'm not.
Okay. Well, tell me, I don't know the rules there. So tell me what you would do as attorney general then.
Well, again, you have obligations as an attorney general to first and foremost, in my opinion, represent the people of the state of Illinois. You do have obligation also to represent state officials. Under circumstances like these, to where the governor had the attorney general had two clients at the same time, the people and the governor, he had to make a choice who he was going to represent. He is chosen at every turn to represent the governor. You go over to Missouri, their attorney general chose to represent the people. If I'm attorney general and Governor Pritzker is still governor, and he tries to continue to do these things, he will no longer have a friend in the attorney general's office. He will have a foe, because I will take action against him on behalf of the people of the state of Illinois, that his actions are beyond his authority.
And Attorney General Raul made clear when he was elected that his priority was going to be challenging the Trump administration. If you go through his press releases from when Trump was there, I mean, it's like many dozens of them, three or four a week, saying he's challenging Trump on this, challenging Trump on that. Beyond that, I can't think of a whole lot that he's done, frankly. Certainly one area where an attorney general could get involved was try to intervene in what's going on in Cook County with the failure by the state's attorney there to prosecute crimes. In some other states, this is happening try to go get around these Soros-backed prosecutors. I don't know if you need statutory authority to do that here in Illinois, but that would certainly be a possible area where an attorney general could make a difference, I would think. Do I have that right?
You do have that right. You know, another thing, what did we just see? Was it just in an article? I've been pretty busy the last few days. Did Mr. Culleton just get charged with some kind of federal crime?
Yes.
Here recently? Why are the federal agents dealing with that? That should have been something to me that our attorney general should have been all over, even long before Mr. Raul, in all defense to him, got in office. Right before that, we had Ms. Madigan. Not sure who before that, but why were they not? Why do we need the federal government coming in here cleaning up the corruption in our state? We should be doing that ourselves. That's a big issue for people that I talk to across the state. And again, you make me attorney general, I don't care what party you're from, Republican or Democrat. If you're committing corruption against people of the state, you will be dealing with the attorney general's office. You won't be having to worry whether or not the feds are going to find time to do it. We'll be taking care of that ourselves.
Yeah, the Illinois Attorney General has not brought any political corruption case in memory. I mean, I don't know, certainly not during Lisa Madigan's term, not during Kwame Raoul's term.
Certainly not one that counts, if they have.
Not one that made the headlines, that, again, I can t- can recall off the top of my head, that's for certain. But, you know, to me, when we see something like we just saw now with Mr. Colton getting charged like that, to me, I look at that, and if I'm Attorney General, I would be embarrassed going, why are we not taking care of our own business, right? We should be doing that ourselves. But, you know, is it politics? I don't know. I'm not going to suggest that if I'm ignorant to it. But it's something. It's a shortcoming somewhere, whatever it was. You know, it was a shortcoming of that office, and I would have liked to have seen Attorney General Raul handle that matter versus it being the federal government.
Tom, what other things do you see the Attorney General office doing that is missing in Illinois? Obviously, we've had, we can talk about corruption all day, but and it's not just the big ones. It's a lot of the little ones. What other role would be crucial to keep turning around this state? And certainly when it comes to pressure.
You know, another thing that's always, and I'm going to be looking at this really close in the next month or two. It's a thing that's always bothered me is looking at the gamesmanship that goes on within our General Assembly. You know, the way they play games and they craft some of this legislation and at the midnight hour, and then they push it through without there ever being, you know, they take a shell bill and they'll just wipe it out and change it and pass stuff. You know, I want to take a real hard look at that, whether there's a due process violation against the people of this state, because not only does our legislature not have a chance to participate when that type of gamesmanship happens, the people are completely cut out of that whole legislative process. And so to me, that's never set well with me, how that happens. And again, that's something that I would want to be at the top priority. I'm not saying that the Attorney General can resolve that issue by some kind of action in a court system, but certainly through his influence with the legislative body to try to put something together that says we're putting an end to that. And I want to be clear, I don't care if it's a Republican governor or a Republican legislature or even the Attorney General, Democrat, Republican, doesn't matter. That type of gamesmanship absolutely goes against everything that we're supposed to be doing when it comes to crafting policy and legislation. And I would want to take a look at that.
Yeah, it's just a smorgasbord of issues you could potentially take on. And I'm looking at a quote from a Marquette political scientist who said, we're in a new normal of AG activism. We can now expect AGs to litigate even their first few months of an administration. And the world is your oyster if you're an attorney general in many states, it seems to me. Tom, you do have you'll have a primary opponent, primary is in June this year.
Yes, sir.
How's that looking? I mean, have you thought about that competition, or how do you tend to run your campaign? You probably haven't put together a staff and all that stuff yet for the campaign, I take it.
We're working on that. You know, there's two gentlemen in the primary. I believe Mr. Kim from up north. I think he might have run at least for a couple of statewide offices before. I don't know him. I know him by name. And then the other gentleman's name is David. I always pronounce it incorrectly. I apologize. I think it's Shatakis or something like that. You know, I've met him once, really nice guy. And again, in the primary, the way that I will handle it is I will make sure I'm clear to people what I'm all about, what I would do consistent with what I've been doing. You put me on the ballot. This is what you can expect from me. And I let them decide for themselves. You know what, Mark and Ted, I will not be, because I do not like those kind of politicians that want to try to say, you should vote for me for these reasons and not for those guys because of these other reasons. You shouldn't vote for them. I won't do that. I'm never going to say anything bad about David or Steve. It'll never happen. I will just merely say, this is what I'm about. And if you want to vote for me, vote for me. And if that means I don't get the primary, that's okay. Nobody's ever going to look at Tom and say that he was bad-mouthing another man or woman because he wanted an election over them. Not going to happen. So that's just how it's going
to
be.
I remember one more thing that's very important to me, and I think people be curious about it, because you brought up earlier the Madigan rules, the Madigan rules that are still there, those House rules. Mm-hmm. I always feel like they totally decapitate the individual in Illinois.
Absolutely.
The way those Madigan rules, and I call them Madigan rules because they're still there, even though he's not. You know, the way they dole out the committee chair positions, who controls votes in committee. Some bills never make it to a vote because they get stuck. You know, it's impossible for a minority party to get a bill on the floor that kind of stuff has to change. Is that something that you've spent time thinking about?
That's what, yeah, and that's kind of what we were touching upon. Again, that's a big, broad conversation. But in general, those rules that you're talking about, you know, the Constitution lays out that the House has broad authority to lay out its rules, right? It's almost, for the most part, a lot of it's not even reviewable by the court. But there is a benchmark, and that benchmark's been set by our United States Supreme Court, is that when those rules get to the point that they're starting to violate the constitutional and fundamental rights of people, then those rules go too far and the courts can review them. Whether these rules meet that standard or not, I'm not here to say today because we're going to be looking at that. But certainly that's something that has to be addressed, because the way that that is laid out, it absolutely, to me, oppresses the whole concept of how our representative republic is intended to work.
Yeah, Tom, so I did some of that work reviewing state by state with another colleague in my previous job. And, you know, we just compared Illinois to where the rest of the country lies. And we are extreme outliers on just about everything, to the point where it really does strip the power of an ordinary citizen. And it gives all those powers to those who control the state house. So it's phenomenal. So I do encourage you, either in your future role, if you get there, and if not, in your future work, to be an advocate for that, because it's a real danger.
Absolutely, it is.
And the Amendment 1 will be on the ballot at the same time, which is going to be highly controversial, we think, and we'll be writing about it and looking up about it a lot. It's on the face, it appears to be merely something that would be radical enough in itself of cementing in collective bargaining rights and prohibiting any right to work efforts. But it really goes much further than that. We're not going to go into that now because it gets very complicated. But my point is that the rule of law may well be a big issue come November in general. And you know, it's been at the national and state level, people everywhere are scratching their heads and asking, what happened to the rule of law in America?
Well, you know, that whole concept, everything we're talking about can be brought down to that concept, the rule of law of how do we create those laws? How do we implement them? And how do we oversee them? And it shouldn't be a surprise, but I think it is a surprise to a lot of people. As civilizations start to develop and the structures get more complicated and you start getting more people, if you get the wrong people in power, they start disregarding that. And it's a human condition. And you guys will like this example because I used it a lot in rooms when I'm talking to people. And typically I'm in a room of people that don't like mask requirements. Let's use the mask requirement as an example of the point that I'm making. If you ask them in the room, how many of you like Governor Pritzker's mask requirement? Nobody will. They all hate it, right? They're like, no, it's wrong, it's bad, et cetera, it shouldn't do it. Then I'll ask them the same question. Well, what do you think about Governor DeSantis' anti-mask rule? And they all roar with approval. They think it's great. And that's when I tell them, you guys are as much of the problem as the people that like Governor Pritzker's rule. And they look at me in shock like, well, you're criticizing me? And I'm like, yeah, because it's a human condition to be more concerned about the outcome than it is how you get there. And if the means doesn't justify the ends, as long as you like the ends, you don't care if the means were justified. And it's a human problem that we have to deal with. And the rule of law is intended to keep that type of action from taking over, because if we start governing ourselves that way, we've lost the way that we founded this nation and we're in trouble. And so what you just said is right. The rule of law has to be what we always rely upon. And that's what I've been doing in the state of Illinois for 2 years. The rule of law says this. I didn't make it up. I didn't write it. I'm not here to say that the ends is what we should actually have, because if the ends say you can't force a mask on a kid without due process of law, if you think that's a bad end, then you better change the law. You just don't disregard it and do what Governor Pritzker did, try to call it something else other than it's not, because you want the ends that suit you. That's going to become, not just in this state, but in this nation, a bigger and bigger issue as the years go by, because we have to rely upon the rule of law, even if it inconveniences us at times and gives us results that we don't like.
Hey, Tom, you know, I think people have felt for a long time in Illinois that they just get run over, and you've walked right into this. But for years, people have like see much pushback on most things in Illinois. Mm-hmm, mostly what you see is just people getting their U-Haul and moving out of the state, right? We've been leading the leading the country and losing people. But I want to say that, you know, starting with the progressive tax and its failure last year, was that last year? No, that's already a year before. The failure of the progressive tax, and now people getting behind this anti-mask and anti-executive order movement, that there's a difference. Am I overplaying it? Is Illinois, are people still passive, or are you seeing, and especially you've been in the middle of it, are you seeing a real kind of rising of Illinoisans being tired of things?
I'm absolutely seeing that. The bigger question is, Ted, is it sustainable? That's what I'm concerned about. Is it sustainable? Absolutely. In the last 2 years, because people always say, oh, there's nothing, getting back to your main point, people, this complacency, oh, we just run over, it doesn't matter. And I tell people, and again, I'm as critical as people that agree with me that don't agree with me. I'm like, you're just lazy. I'm like, you sit here and complain to me. Tell me what you've done in the last 2-3 years. You go to school board meetings. You go to your city council meetings. Do you have any idea what's going on in your state legislature? Any of that? And they don't. They don't have a clue. They just feel helpless and like there's nothing I can do because they're too busy going golfing, or they're too busy going to the little football games. They're enjoying that life that we have in this country that blesses us. And they haven't really appreciated that they have to take the time and participate, because I tell them there is a cost to complacency. When you're complacent in how your government is operating, there's a cost. You may not see it. You may not see it in 10 years, but your grandchildren will see it, and you need to pay attention. They're awake now. A lot of people are awake. I get thousands and thousands of people saying, Tom, I'm not going back to sleep. I'm paying attention now. I'm trying to learn. I'm trying to educate myself, trying to understand how government works. And that's encouraging for me. The question that we have is that going to be sustainable? And let's say the election comes along, gentlemen, in November, and let's say that somebody other than Governor Pritzker gets elected. It's a Republican. Do people, they think, oh, everything's good now, and we go back to sleep? If they do that, we're going to be in trouble again, and probably still in our lifetime.
Well, Tom, we're not going to try to steal any more of your thunder from your official announcement on the 28th, or take up any more of your time, because you, God knows you got plenty to do. Ted, unless you have anything else, we'll let Tom go.
No, Tom, for everything you've done on bringing people together and pushing back against it, or how about this, and bringing back rule of law.
That's what it is. And all it took was the people, gentlemen. I tell people all the time, I wasn't out in front making this happen. I was standing behind you guys trying to push you out into the limelight, because I tell them, in August of 2020, we argued, it wasn't exactly the same legal issue, but it was similar, argued the same issue in front of Judge Grischow. And she ruled in favor of the governor, said that his mask mandate had to be followed. February 2022, again, not the same exact legal issue, but practically it was still the mask issue. She issues a ruling that pretty much accuses the governor of, you know, misconduct. It went pretty close. And what's the difference? The difference is people, millions and millions of people standing up for what they believed was right. That was the difference. The law didn't change. The law was exactly the same as it's always been. So people have an influence in how their state is governed, how it's run. They just have to get off the couch and participate. If we can get them to do that, gentlemen, it doesn't matter who's in elected office. I tell them all the time, I don't care who your governor is, as much if you're participating than if you're asleep at the wheel. Because if you're participating, you'll keep them all in check.
All right, Tom DeVore, thank you very much. And we'll talk to you next time on the Dialogue from Wire Points.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.